for us.
Case number calendar is 97-22-22, City of Parma versus Public Utility Commission of Ohio. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Peggy Bryant, who is the judge of the Court of Appeals in Kansas College District. Mr. Eckert.
May it please the Court, the Council of Records, City of Village, Orange, City of Parma, City of Bedford, right in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for closing. With me here today in court is Timothy Dobek, the new law director. Mayor of Parma, Mr. Gerald Polk. The parties in this appeal have entered into a settlement agreement for a temporary delay in the assignment of the annexes, which are the subject of the issue of this case, in the three communities, which provides that Ameritech will refrain from issuing the annexes until this case is finally resolved by this court. The issues in this case are therefore not moved by any means. The four propositions of law that the appellants have raised are, number one, failure of the PUCO to give proper notice of the proceeding as required by section 49 of 5.26, and number two, before the PUCO can permit Ameritech and the area code administrator to split the three communities of the appellants in 13 communities in all, it must find that there's need for area code relief. The proposed plan for relief is just and reasonable, and it is not sufficient to just determine that the proposed plan is not unjust and unreasonable.
You say that the issue or the case is not moot. The area code changes have already been made, have they not?
The 440 area code is in effect for everybody else. It is partially in effect as to the NXXs, the three digits, the first seven digits in our three communities, but those things have been preserved, protected, reserved, and can still be reassigned back to us in the 216 area code. So this court can solve our problems by simply ordering the PCO to order Ameritech, the administrator of the plan, to reassign those in the 216 area code, and we're back where we started.
But if we reverse this case and say the commission does not have the authority to do as they did here, then it would require what you're suggesting, that all of the changes that have been made and put into effect with regard to any area code would have to be made, would it not?
I don't believe that it's quite that broad, Your Honor. I think there's only a few number limited NXXs that were used in Parma and Bedford Heights and Orange Village that would have to be reinstituted in 216, and they have not been used.
But to get to that point, we have to say they don't have the authority. And if they don't have the authority, then anything they've done pursuant to that usurped authority would have to be undone.
Well,
and they've changed a lot of area codes.
You could go that far from much higher, but we're the only ones who bothered to appeal the case. We're the only ones who filed a complaint, took the burden, and you could solve part of the problem without solving affecting the rest of the customers. And the point number three, before the PUCO can determine that a number exhaust situation exists in an area code, such as the 216 area code, it must first consider the number of customers in the area code, the number of lines available for those customers, the number of NXX codes currently assigned in the area code, how many numbers are currently available in the area code, how many numbers are unavailable in the area code, and what are the alternatives available to delay or eliminate the need for any area code relief. Our fourth proposition is that when the PUCO assumes jurisdiction to regulate area code numbering plans, it is obligated to see to it that the industry guidelines for area codes and central office codes are implemented. As to our proposition law number one, that the notices in this case were affected, there were a number of reasons, but primarily, Section 4905.26 requires that the notice be published not less than 15 nor more than 30 days before the hearing. This notice, in this case, was published on July 17th and July 18th, 1997, which was only 3 and 4 days before the hearing in Cleveland, Ohio, on July 21, 1997.
Once you find out about it, you've had a lot of witnesses show up and you prepare the defendant. If this notice was before, how did you find out about it?
Well, we as a party had not only filed a complaint, but participated in a pre-hearing conference and were told that, and were served with an entry that the commission issued, or that the attorney examiner issued on July 11th, that ordered that notice be published for 2 weeks, 2 consecutive weeks, in publication of general circulation in the communities, and set the case for a hearing. So we knew.
And you're the only complaining party at this point, and you just pointed out to us, and you knew, despite the public notice, you and your client had complained, correct?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a complaining notice, Your Honor.
What did you mean?
Well, it was from July 11th to July 21st. That the entry was issued July 11th.
So, when was the hearing?
It started in Cleveland on July 21st. And there was a second day on July 23rd.
When did you first start your process of your pre-hearing?
Well, I just first started filing the complaint, and then we got invited to the pre-hearing conference, and we went to that. But what we're saying is not just that we didn't get notice, but that this affected 2 million people in this area code. It affected probably 80 different communities.
But as you pointed out, they're not part of the appeal.
Well, I don't accept that we got plenty of notice. We had enough notice that we were there, the mayor was there, the law director was there. We had some witnesses that we put on. We employed a nationally known expert witness who, in a hurry, revised his testimony that he made in the Illinois Commerce Commission case regarding Chicago, which involved a Illinois bell, which was the same case. Situation, and he revised that, and he came in and testified.
Well, your client prejudiced your client, many other people. So your client prejudiced by the shorter notice.
Yes, I think there were, and that's obviously a very, very important point. Our clients were only one small matter, but what we argue is Public Utilities Commission itself had the obligation to regulate Ameritech under the statutes 49.03 or 4.05, and that they didn't do their job, and because of the hurried, short, fast-track procedure that went on here, we were all prejudiced, including my clients. If there had been adequate time, adequate notice, adequate preparation, the staff of the Public Utilities Commission would have had time to do its job. Instead of starting after we filed our complaint, they should have been in a position to regulate Ameritech before we ever got to this point.
So the fast-tracking, Council, is something different. Fast-tracking is something different than I thought. Your complaint was that there was failure to comply with the hearing, the 15-day requirement that the hearing be held.
One of our arguments, Your Honor, that's the first point. The technical jurisdictional question, which this court has held in a number of cases that are cited in our brief, 2 or 3 of which involve the same Ameritech Ohio Bell as we're involved in this case. But that's not the foundation or the whole major point of this case. In fact, the commission just didn't give adequate notice. It didn't prepare. It wasn't ready, and then it didn't consider the substantive issues.
Okay, so you're hearing, the hearing time is just a part of it. Because your hearing time was only a few days short of what you would have had under the strict compliance with the statute.
We wouldn't be here if that was the only issue.
Yeah.
But you didn't raise...
The other 3 issues are substantively important.
You didn't raise that issue with the commission, did you? I mean, you went ahead with the hearing. You didn't tell the commission, we're not ready. We need more time because you haven't given us enough time pursuant to the statute. That wasn't done, was it? I mean, is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. It was not raised at the time the hearing started on the 21st. As a matter of fact, the publication of the notice was not filed with the Public Utilities Commission until the 24th, after the hearing was over, and sometime subsequent to that, I see the entry, the notice is a little box about an inch and a half by an inch and a half in small print that couldn't possibly have given any real notice to the 2 million people and to the 80 communities in this area. Nobody saw it, nobody knew it was there.
The commission said, as you know, that this was this sort of fast tracking, the expedited hearing was required because of the exigent circumstances here, that they'd already decided to use a different code number, and that in fact it was a complainant's, not I suppose request, but it was the circumstances that required them to move quickly. Is that, what do you say to that?
Well, I thought the commission's real argument was that the reason they went so fast is because we requested the expedited hearing process. More accurately, we didn't request this expedited hearing process. We didn't request that the commission violate 4909.26. All we asked for was that they issue an order forthwith barring Meritech as the plan administrator from going ahead with this plan. There was no absolute necessity to go ahead with this plan. They had quietly put it together, quietly got it all decided as to how they were going to cut up all these neighborhoods and all these communities. Then they hold a press conference and announce it as a given and a fait accompli, and on they go.
The complaint, though, counsel, did ask that the set a full evidentiary hearing in the city of Parma on the issues raised at the earliest possible opportunity.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that it has to violate the notice requirements and the statutes. We don't have any authority to ask the commission to violate the statutes. Or they said themselves that the thing should have been published.
Yeah, I thought your argument. Okay, I thought we already agreed that your argument was not just on the few days that they missed on the hearing, the notice of publication.
I'd like to work out, though, before you leave that, there isn't any case law that indicates that it's jurisdictional. Is
that that's jurisdictional?
Yeah.
I cited two or three court cases in my brief in which I said that this court had reversed the PCO in the Meritech and how about they
so part of your argument is that defect is just actually due favor.
I'd like to have the court decide that, but I don't have to have the court decide that.
But what was your prejudice with regard to those few days, if it in fact existed? Because you said in your complaint that there are reasonable grounds to have a hearing, and we asked for a hearing, and that's what you got.
Well, what we got was what I call frontier justice, a speedy hearing and a quick hanging.
They gave you a fair trial before they hanged you, didn't they?
One of our major theses and really the substantive issues is that the Meritech, as the plan administrator, had a legal obligation to follow the industry guidelines, which they introduced as evidence, which are in the record in this case, in which I've cited, that require, number one, that they consider all sorts of alternatives, and that they respect boundary lines and municipalities and government lines. They cut in half 13 different communities. We're saying they violated their own industry guidelines.
And that's your merit argument.
Yeah, that's the substance. That's one of the most important points. But more than that, we think that the Public Utilities Commission has a duty to regulate utilities in this state, and it's set out by statute. They did nothing. They sent an informal observer to these meetings, these quiet public, supposed public body meetings, and that's all they ever did.
Counselor, I guess I'm for purposes of clarification. In terms of the relief you're seeking here, are you seeking just to have the order reversed, or are you seeking to force the Public Utilities to take some affirmative action along the lines of the argument you're making?
Well, I think we have some alternative choices for the relief we're seeking. Of course, primarily I represent these three communities, and I think they are the ones who are most easily rectified, or the remedy most easily asserted on their behalf. There's a few minor area NSXs involved, so far as those three communities are concerned, and out of 791 NSXs available in each area code, there are a handful of them. So, first primary relief we're requesting is that you solve the problem of the three communities that are repellents here. But we would also like this court to solve the other 13, the whole total 13 communities' problems. They shouldn't any of them have to have been cut up and have two area codes and have their community of interest violated. So that would be our second choice.
I guess what I'm getting at is this a prospective sort of thing that you want some language that suggests that the commission has a duty in the future to act proactively in these things rather than being a bystander or an observer? Or are you saying this whole thing has to go back? We have to study everything the Blue Ribbon Commission did and let the commission act the way you say it should?
No. From a purely selfish standpoint, we don't require that the court do that, and we certainly don't think it should be responsibility on behalf of the PUCO in the future. I think you could send a message to the PUCO that sending informal observers to important area code matters that affect originally 4 million people and then in the second phase 2 million people is not acceptable regulatory conduct. They did nothing. They just sat there and watched until we filed our complaint, and then they objected to what we did because they said we were too late. It's not us that was too late. It's Ameritech that had the responsibility to invoke and enforce the codes, the area codes and the NSX codes. And it was the PUCO who had the obligation to regulate Ameritech and to see that they did this. Neither one of those people did anything until after we filed our complaint. Then the PUCO, in our case, and then when it issues an order, opens a commission ordered investigation to do all this. And since the time has passed, they've issued an entry in that commission ordered investigation, which I supplied as additional authority here, which set out a whole lot of procedures and guidelines, which I think in the future will solve many of these problems and would have eliminated this problem.
You've used your time, Mr. Record.
Okay, thank you,
Ron.
I've got 3 minutes left.
No, you have about 30 seconds, and I'll give you 30 seconds. It goes fast, doesn't it?
Yes.
Mr. Hurst.
I'll save that 30 seconds at least. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Mr. Kelly, Ameritech.
You need to watch your time on the clock closely, so you need to have some time.
Thank you. First of all, let me address a couple of preliminary matters that reference the stay agreement, if you will, where they ask this court to stay mandatory cutover for the 4-4 area code introduction in the spring of 98, about a year ago. They withdrew that based on Ameritech's agreement to simply hold these NXX codes with the first three digits of the telephone number back for assignment, which is something they would have done anyway, and they would have put those at the end of the queue anyway. They were happy that does not undo the what has already been done and what their failure to get a stay has been, you know, it's water under the bridge. It is moot in the sense that 440 was introduced. The people have gone through the area code change and reversing the commission's decision in this case does not take the appellants where they want to be and does not offer the relief they want this court to simply solve the problems for the communities.
That's why I asked the question, because it doesn't seem to me that they get any relief at all with that.
They don't, Your Honor, and I believe, you know, their best case scenario, certainly we wouldn't see if there's any reason the court needs to reverse the commission, but even under their best case scenario, it would cause their residents to go through another area code change. Under some of the scenarios, and this is a very complicated technical area to do it.
But they might still want to change back. They might still want to be.
Change back. That's one thing, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. One of the, if for example, if they're made whole in the future and back into the 440 area code, that might involve seven-digit number changes for many of the residents that are now 216.
So what is stayed? What is stayed? What you say this is only prefixes that are held back, not area code?
All that means is they wouldn't be assigned pending this appeal. They wouldn't be assigned to one of the things with new area codes introduced, it frees up all the codes that were used in the area that's now in the new area code for use in the old area of downtown Cleveland, this example. So they wouldn't assign those. They would normally assign them right away anyway, because they would want to use the same number right away for confusion purposes.
But those are reserved for the 216.
They just agreed not to use them pending the appeal. It doesn't permit
backing up. You're saying that it doesn't permit.
It may help with one option of on remand. Back to whatever year we're in. Certainly, it's a complex area, and what it's driven by, the exchange boundaries drive the area code boundaries, and you can't typically simply split an exchange because the numbers in that exchange are the address for the routing and the billing of the calls throughout the world, and those are the address for someone to call that exchange. So. It's very difficult, inefficient, and requires seven-digit number changes to split exchanges like that. So what happens, the exchanges were built around the city of Cleveland to make Cleveland whole, and on the fringes, the commission found that it was unavoidable and simply unachievable to avoid any communities being served by two area codes.
The
political boundaries simply are not coincident to the exchange boundaries, and that's
this testimony of Dr. Selwyn that the complainants here take solace in that testimony as having provided a good deal of options that would have avoided the exhaust.
Your Honor, I'd be happy to answer specific questions about each one of those.
Yeah.
I would say in general that the commission carefully considered that evidence, and for one reason and another, depending on which one you're talking about, determined that it was either only a temporary solution, it was ineconomic, very expensive, and that it really didn't solve the problem overall. I mean, making farm up whole hurts other communities, and it would simply cause that there were 8 additional communities that would have been split if the commission had granted farmers relief in this case, and by this time it's even a higher number, and would continue to go up. I like to try to, it's very important the court understand that the nature of this case. The felons talk about the commission was asleep at the wheel, the commission should have regulated this utility closely. At the time of this case, there was no legal requirement for pre-approval of area code change. And the commission, absent them filing this complaint case, the staff had been monitoring and involved with the Blue Ribbon panel. The commission was aware, did not see any problems. And absent them filing this complaint, getting the commission to order something else, there was no requirement for the commission to approve this. So that's, again, that's why reversing the commission doesn't take them where they need to be in any way.
Counsel, part of the duty of the commission relates not just to rates, it relates to the level and nature of service.
Absolutely.
Okay. About how long back in time could you see this coming? That is the commission.
Well, Your Honor, let me put it this way. Let me briefly tell you what causes these number exhaust situations. There's been an incredible demand increase in recent years through fax machines, cellular phones,
pagers, etc. We all live in the real world. We understand.
And most people understand.
Okay, but how long? How long could they not see this?
Let me put it this way, Your Honor. Prior to the 96 Act, there were four area codes in Ohio. 3 years have passed since that time. The area codes, as you know, have doubled. In the next 10 years, they're expected to double again to 15. And 216 is expected to split again in the year 2005.
That's
all these is a moving target, Your Honor, and it's based on forecasts. And what I'm telling you is the 96 Act.
How long could they have not? I mean, they couldn't have seen this coming 5-10 years ago?
No, it's a moving target. The 96 Act is a critical thing to change the landscape and the demand. And each competitor now, with any type of telecommunications service, has to have their own inventory of numbers. They have to be prepared to serve. That's a new thing.
I just have a simple question.
Yeah.
About how far back in time could the commission reasonably have been expected to anticipate these kind of problems and began to talk to the phone companies about trying to arrange switching equipment and all of those things so that you would have integrity of natural political and geographical balance?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I don't the premise, I don't believe it's viewed as a problem, number one. I think there's been places for a long time.
I ask a question. How long back?
I can't answer that. I'm sorry.
Well, wouldn't tell me that.
I apologize. I wasn't trying to deny answer your question, Your Honor. I guess the premise, though, that that's the problem, I believe there's been areas like Bucyrus. I think certain parts are covered, and that's always been true. And so it's not viewed as a problem. In fact, the important point to recognize here, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has exclusive authority over numbering in the United States, and that was brought about, again, by the 96 Act. They, both the Ameritech's role in this case as number administrator, they were delegated the authority from the FCC to act as number administrator. Today, Lockheed Martin, private company, is the administrator. Today, if this complaint was filed, it would be against Lockheed Martin. This is not the traditional public utility relationship the commission has here in broad supervisory power. The commission's role in this case was also in the form of exercising delegated authority that in May of 1996, the FCC delegated to state commissions. And there are strings attached to that, and there are definitely limitations to what the commission can do. There are a menu of options that the FCC has allowed states to use.
So the commission has no power?
The commission has power. I'm not sure.
With respect to what area code, I mean, if it has no power to affect this transition and to affect outcomes, or offer any relief to any citizen or community, then we shouldn't be here. I mean, is that your argument? It has no power.
No, Your Honor, I want you to recognize that the commission's power is limited. It's not the broad public utility supervision.
So what can it do? Can it force the telecom to do anything with respect to how we provide these exchanges?
Well, yes, of course they can do that in a number of ways. But primarily, the FCC's delegation of power is in the context of numbering jobs, which is the context of how this case arose.
So what he's a good lawyer. Did the commission do?
He takes
the commission weighed the options. They rejected some of the appellant's options, which, by the way, were very similar to options that the Pennsylvania Commission employed, which he submitted as judicial authority. The FCC's slap at the commission in Pennsylvania that said you really can't do a lot of these things. You can't do number pooling. You can't do code splitting and some of these things that they've required that their arguments are premised on.
Did the commission lay down any guidelines and any instructions to the telecom company? Look, these are within the range of what is technically feasible with your equipment.
Notes.
Here are the priorities you ought to file court, for example, when you draw congressional districts or when you draw legislative districts, there are certain guidelines and priorities.
Yes.
In the Constitution, did the commission offer any instruction out to the telephone companies,
Your Honor,
far enough out in advance that they could actually do something about it?
Again, this goes back to the FCC. The FCC has issued guidelines. Those are the guidelines that are binding on the number administrator. And the commission had this new authority after 1996 to look at this. They did not see the problems that appellant sees. And,
I mean, part of Mr. Eckert's argument is that the commission just sort of sat back and let this
lay
down on the citizens. And my question is, did the commission get proactive? Did it see this as a quality of service issue at all? Did they do anything?
Well,
if so, what did they do?
First of all, with respect to the COI that they mentioned, the commission has tried to look at all the ways the process, public input, planning functions here to be improved. I don't think that should be used against the commission in this case, but that's a remedial effort the commission has taken since the time of that decision, being consistent with Rule 407, for example, the evidentiary principles to try to use that against the commission. But really, the commission said in its COI the things they'd like to see how it would work. They're working right now in conjunction with other states to get more authority from the FCC, but it goes back to the FCC, what the FCC is willing states to do, and how they control the number of administrators, which again, now is not a public utility, it's Lockheed Martin that's doing that. That's important to keep in mind. With respect to service,
you have less than 2 minutes left. If you want to leave some time for Mr. Kelly, you need to
just
complete your area.
With respect to service, the commission found that being served by two area codes is not an adequate service. The FCC's one of their three most common area code solutions is an overlay that inherently involves two area codes in the same geographic area. It's clear that that's not an adequate service. There were no rate increases here. And the department is probably the only party that sees this as a critical problem. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Kelly, when I pick up the telephone and I want to telephone someone in Parma, and I live here in Columbus, I live in the stars, not being able to look at a map and have some sense of what area code that's not a service issue, quality of service issue, both for the farmer resident and for the citizen who is somewhere else who doesn't have much reason to know.
No, Your Honor, I don't think it is. Area codes have changed.
Correct.
But the fact that somebody's area code changes can in no reasonable way be considered inadequate service. There's plenty of notice given, the lines are carefully drawn, the directories are published with the new number, including the area code. Citizens of the department do have two different area codes, depending on which portion of the farm you live in. But if you had a friend or acquaintance up there, there was plenty of notice. People were told, advise your friends and relatives that your area code has changed. If you call Directory of Citizens today to try to reach one of those folks, you're going to be given the proper number with the proper area code. And the maps in the directories themselves are updated. Well, that's not exactly right. If the area code boundary had been changed, those numbers could have been preserved. I think what you're speaking to is the settlement agreement that Mr. Eckert referred to, which should the court or should the commission in the three communities represented here today, individuals would not have to undergo a seven-digit number change. Absent that agreement, though, you're correct.
If you decided to make Carver all 404, whatever it is, you would, instead of just giving it back to 216, you just made all of Carver 404, then the other half of Carver would have to change their entire benefits.
Not necessarily. Because those exchanges could be assigned to one area code or another. But the effect of that, let me ask that question, the effect of that is some communities south and east of Parma will be impacted in that way. The commission points that out on page 17 of the opinion and order, and Chairman Glazer, in his concurring opinion, pointed out something that hasn't been discussed here. If you move this line, some other communities are impacted. In other words, Parma, citizens of Parma have two area codes, depending on where in Parma you live, which exchange your telephone is assigned to. If you move that line, you affect Broadview Heights and North Road. And I should point out, some of those communities participated in the hearing before the commission. They weren't thrilled with the idea of a new area code, but they would rather have had 440 than have 440 in the northern half, or 440 in the southern half, and 216 in the northern half. So there were communities represented here that didn't necessarily like having an area code change, but they were concerned that if Parma got the relief Parma was seeking, their communities would be impacted. So it's a domino effect. Where you draw the line, if you decide to move that line in the congressional redistricting sense, somebody else is impacted.
So I'm interested.
It's like reapportion.
Yep. How far out? How far back? Could you see this coming?
Sure.
And at what point did the companies who are providing service go to the regulatory authorities who presumably represent broad spectrum of public interest and say, look, this is going to have to happen?
Right.
Do you have any thoughts or guidance?
This one just was about 4 years in the making, and if you go back, as the record indicates, it was first recognized. This was the first place in the country that this was done. It was recognized about 4 years ago that the 216 area code would need relief. That means you need a new area code. And it was recognized then that if it was granted that relief at one point, it would need relief again very shortly. So the industry undertook this two-phase approach, which we're faced with here today. The first split of the 216 area code resulted in the 330 area code, which now serves Akron's Justice Cook, I'm sure is aware. There was no complaint filed concerning that one. The commission staff participated very actively with the industry participants in understanding the parameters of that change and the impacts of that change, and to make sure that the industry and FCC guidelines that Mr. Nurse referred to were followed. Now, when it came time in the 330 area code, what
did
it
did the commission ever give the companies any formal or informal guidance as to some of the criteria they thought ought to be observed were possible?
Well, Justice Hybrid really didn't have to, because Mr. Nurse explained the FCC has some very definitive guidelines on the books today. But even prior to the FCC adopting those rules, there were standard industry guidelines adopted and implemented on a national basis as to how these things get done. And they took into consideration some of the things you mentioned. But I should point out that it's not like drawing a congressional or legislative boundary. This is a technological process where the first thing that has to be respected are telephone exchange boundaries. As Mr. Nurse said, those exchange boundaries by historical accident do not necessarily follow the boundaries of counties, townships, municipalities, or anything else. They are there because the engineering technology 6 years or so years ago. He's right to this extent, and he cites the Illinois decision in support of his position. The Illinois Commission, and a few commissions around the country, require the companies to come in and seek permission to change an area code. Some of those commissions do take, I would say, a more active official, somebody talked about, you know, prescriptive role in this process. Here, the Ohio Commission, and as I said, the staff in all of these area code changes over the past has been an observer and a participant in this process to make sure it's done.
I think I understand what observer means. Well, what is a participant in the legal sense?
Well, that depends on your vantage point. Here, the commission became a participant because they complained to SPOT. There's no requirement in Ohio law and no requirement in commission precedent that Ameritech seek the permission of the commission to do this. Are you with me there? Why this case is here is because a complaint was filed challenging the decision to do this. And if I could just digress a moment to Justice Douglas's question, where does that get you? If the court reverses this case, all that says is the commission didn't have jurisdiction to resolve this complaint. Well, we didn't need permission to implement the area code, so we have the status quo. The area code is up there.
That's all under federal regulations.
Exactly. So the commission, Justice Piper, to your point, in no way dropped the ball. The commission staff has been an active participant in all of these changes when the complaint was filed, and I want to reiterate, seeking emergency relief and seeking expedited ruling.
But as I understand the complaint, and Morris's argument is that the commission didn't do anything or didn't do enough to help us out.
And then I totally disagree with that. The commission heard the complaint, fully and thoroughly analyzed the evidence, the testimony of their expert witness, analyzed the testimony of our witness.
In your view, is they concluded based on the technological limitations switching equipment.
It's clear on the federal regulations.
You're going to have to split this baby, or else you're going to have to split someone.
And not just that, some of the equities. And I think the opinion of order speaks to that. And Chairman Glazer reiterated this in his concurrent opinion. You have to draw the line somewhere. And these communities feel they were harmed. By where the line was drawn, our position is no harm has been shown. The commission found no harm from a change of area code, and the complaint simply was not recognizable under 49.526.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you.
Mr. Eckert, take a minute instead of 30 seconds, since Mr. Kelly could serve one more time.
First, as to Chuck's question about the alternatives and the technical matters, those were not rebutted on the record. As I pointed out, they were rebutted off the record. If you look at Chairman Glazer's concurring opinion, it said that the staff left no stone unturned to consider these things. That's not the evidence in the record. The staff witness testified that he wasn't prepared to make any recommendations. His study was the data request he submitted after we filed our complaint was only asked to fight with, and he took no position in the case. That, I think, relates to your recent decision in the Donger case just this last 7 days, in which there was not an adequate record on which the commission could make these decisions. Secondly, the FCC has plenary jurisdiction over all this, but they delegated and allowed the PUCO and the state commissions to take actual jurisdiction and to do this. So the PUCO has had this authority for a long time ago, and they had 4 or 5 years as Ameritech had to resolve these problems. The change to these other communities is one of the issues that we've raised. If there had been adequate notice to everybody, everybody could have come in. But there were 80,000 people in Parma that were adversely affected by having their communities split, no matter whether they're in the 25% that remained in 216 or the 75% that moved over to 440. So what we're saying is that Parma does want the change back, that it can be done. The mayor's here to confirm that they still want to be back in 216. So this court can resolve this problem. They can limit their decision to the three communities, order the PCO to award to those three communities what they have been entitled to from the very beginning and should have been given. And the court can also, if it chooses,
order the commission to do what it should have done in generic.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise.